7-day intensive seminar, School of the Master, Lecture 17. Hospitals are for wholeness. Do you believe that? Hospitals are for wholeness. This is absolutely contrary to what people think every day. Every day people think that a hospital is where you go when you're sick. A hospital is where you go when you want to die. A hospital is where you go when you have problems that you can't handle yourself. A hospital is where you go where you find someone who is smarter than you are and knows more medicine than you do and can manipulate your body and manipulate your mind and manipulate your world and get your attention. I think Rex does a much better job of that. He gets our attention just through his own cavorting here and having a good time. Rex, are you having a good time? You're having a good time, aren't you? Yes, you are. Oh, yes. Okay. Lecture 17. Hospitals are for wholeness. Hospitals are for wholeness mentally, physically, and spiritually. Who, as Alice in Wonderland's cat, Cheshire Cat, would say, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? And the cat in the hat, who are you? The Mad Hatter, who are you? The rabbit and his watch, I'm late. Who are you? Who are you? Are you what appears to be right here, right now? Well, let's pray to heaven that that's not true. Let's pray to God that it's not true that what we see is really you. Because what we see is a limitation. We see a body subject to disease, subject to mental illness, subject to physical illness. We see all of these terrible, terrible things. That's what we see when we see you. Wash your hands. Got to be clean. Don't want to get bacteria on your hands. Be careful of where you go, the type of food you eat. Is that water good water? Be careful of the food that you eat. You go in the field, the farmer's field, the cows have pissed all over the field and shit all over the field, and then you go and pick up the fruit that's lying in the field and you eat it. And you think, oh, that's so good. You know, you brush off the dust. You don't think fertilizer when you brush it off. You just think grass or brush or whatever. But that's what it is. It's fertilizer. And if you thought what many people would like to have you think, you'd be a dead cat all the time. You'd be living in a very sad world. Now, Hippocrates, the father of medicine, taught all of his students from the beginning of his teaching about medicine, never do to a patient something you wouldn't do to yourself. Never give a patient a potion, some medicine that you wouldn't take yourself. And never do anything, did you hear this? Never do anything to a patient that assists them in death, that causes them to die or assists them to die. Now, we have different opinions on that today a little bit, but never do anything to a patient that would cause them to die. This is right in the Hippocratic Oath. This is what every doctor takes as he graduates from medicine school, gets his MD at least. This is what he has agreed to do. Never give a patient a poison that will hurt them. Never do any. And do the doctors do that? Well, to the best of their ability. But what is the worst poison that a doctor gives to a patient that really is just too much? You are going to die. Because the diagnosis says you're going to die, you're going to die. Now, you say, well, that's not everybody. Well, that's many, many. If you don't brush your teeth, you're going to have decay in your teeth. And if you don't, you know, use mouthwash, the girls won't kiss you anymore, you know, because you have bacteria in your mouth and you won't be kissing sweet, you know. And if you don't do this and you don't do that, and you don't, they threaten you. They threaten you. If a doctor were to come up to us, for instance, and were to say, all right, group, these are ways to improve your health. Drink lots of fluid. Eat lots of good food. Have a good elimination. And he might conclude with this, and think good thoughts. Now, wouldn't that be a wonderful diet? Mm-hmm. Really, wouldn't that be a wonderful diet? Wouldn't that be a diet that would end all diets? We wouldn't have to go buying special breads and special nuts and special this and special that. All we do is just eat whatever is the normal things that are available. And they would not help us or hurt us. What helps us or hurts us the most?
Our thoughts.
Exactly. You know what I want you to say. But it's our thoughts. Our thoughts are what help us or hurt us the most. Now, what do you like to do? Do you like to live in a healthy body? Then you have to think healthy thoughts. We have a song on that, don't we? It's kind of a nice little song, always worth repeating. And it goes like this. If a body wants a body that is well and strong, he must think a perfect body, think it all day long. Make your mind acknowledge your body perfect, perfectly. You'll demonstrate a perfect body, perfectly. So, you'll demonstrate a body perfectly. Now, if we sing that song, I have such a wonderful body, 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 my body is great, my body is great, I have such a wonderful body, my body is great, my body is great, I have such a wonderful body. And when we think that, what are we telling? Now we're reverting back to putting causes in motion. And the cause is that I have a perfect body. The cause is put in motion. Now, what takes the cause and brings it forth? Is it the mind that does this? Is it the white stem cells that do this? Is it our attitude that does it? Or is it all those things? Mm-hmm. Pretty much all those things, isn't it? So now, the mind has the idea that we have a body with problems, because that's what we think about. So when we think about a body that is whole and perfect, then the mind is going to think that we have a body that's whole and perfect. Because the mind only knows about the body what we tell it about the body. Because the mind is not interested in what our body is doing. The mind is only interested in what it is doing. The thought is not interested in our body. It's only interested in what it is doing. White stem cells are not interested in our body. They're only interested in what they're doing. So when we tell our thoughts that we're whole and perfect, when we tell our mind that we're whole and perfect, when we tell our body that it is whole and perfect, then we are telling it well. And it responds in just that way. Now, are you strong enough to say that to yourself in the face of a different appearance? Are you strong enough to tell yourself that you're whole and perfect, even when your body doesn't look too good, even when your body might have a problem, you know? Therefore, to wit, and so forth, and doctors again, when you go to a hospital, or a doctor, hospital or not, and he gives you a check over, and he says, this is my understanding of where you are. From what you tell me and what I see in your body, these are your problems. These are the symptoms that you're dealing with. Now, if you take these pills, you will alleviate the symptoms and you'll have other symptoms. If you take these pills, you may have to take them all the rest of your life to keep them from coming back, because we haven't got the cause. Now, if we work as a psychiatrist, psychologist on the cause, first we like to dig in the dirt and bring up all the unhappy things so that you have something to work on, and then we work with you for the rest of your life on trying to get rid of what we brought up. You put it away a long time ago, most of it, you know. So we don't need to recall the past. We don't need to recall any of the bad instances. Your father was mean to you, that's why you're a mean little kid, you know? And that's not true. She's a mean little kid because she's a mean little kid because she doesn't know about being a happy little kid. And we're going to teach her about being a happy little kid. You know you're a happy little kid? You know, you're always doing nice things. You know, you're always a love to have around. It's just fun to take you places. I'm taking you to Disneyland with me today. You want to go? Yes, 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 yes. Well, let's just have fun. Oh, geez, she wants to go too. So, want to go to Disneyland, all right? Now, what are we going to do in Disneyland? We're going to have fun. Now, in Disneyland, one rule. Stay in my sight. Because if I lose you, I'm going to be very unhappy, and then I'm going to have to put a chain around you and hold on to you tight. But just keep me in your sight, because it's easier for you to keep me in your sight than it is for me to keep you in my sight, because I'm interested in all these other things. Well, I am too. Well, it's your job to keep me in your sight while we're here in this park. Otherwise, you go to the lost and found, and somebody else might come along and claim you, and then I won't have you anymore. Now, keep me in your sight. So that works pretty good. And you know what that says? You know what that says? What does that say? Keep me in your sight.
Responsibility.
No, no. Keep me in your sight says, I like you enough that I want you always to be available to me. I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose you. Keep me in your sight. I don't want to lose you. I like you. I love you. Woo-hoo-hoo. And maybe they hadn't heard that before. And, of course, that's a way of saying it in a very subtle way without saying, look, I love you. I want you to be with me. I enjoy your company, you know. But if you say, now you keep me in your sight so I don't lose you, you know. I don't want somebody else to come along and claim you, and then I won't have you to take home with me and stuff like that, you know. And, of course, that's negative thinking and that's dumb stuff talking. But it's what they need. It's what they need to be loved, because they've all been conned with, I love you, and I want you to be good because I love you, and you're a nice girl because I love you. You understand? And that sort of stuff just has a length of rope that only goes so far. The other is infinite. Do you know what would happen if you did that as I suggested? That kid would be tied to your coat strings. That kid would grab your hand and say, come on, let's go over here, let's go over here, let's go over here. You know, because they don't want to lose you. They don't want to lose their ride home. They don't want to lose you. They found somebody who loves them for their own little silly self. And that's kind of rare. That's kind of rare. How many people like bad children? Not very many. How many people like children who don't behave? Not very many. How many people know how to have children want to behave? Not very many. Because it takes a little extra imagination to make children want to behave. And that extra imagination is a pain in the butt. Because you have to do some strange things that you're not used to doing. You have to think like a child, for one thing. And you have to be super loving, unconditionally loving, so that you don't get mad at them because they're mad at the world, you know. And you can't think that they're mad at you. If you think they're mad at you, you're done. But if you think they're mad at the world or they're mad at something else, that's fine, we'll work that out. That's no big deal. But if you ever think they're mad at you, then you have no tools to work with except the stick. Womp, 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 you know. And that doesn't help anybody. So you're the adult. You're the adult. Remember the little boy who came and kicked his mother, and she says, what's the matter, dear? You know, well, Johnny stole my bike. Well, why did he steal your bike? Well, he wanted it. Well, let's go talk to Johnny. So he talked to Johnny, and remember, Johnny said, I want his bike. I need it. I want it. Well, Johnny, that's not the way to get it. Why are you acting this way? Well, my mother. Aha. My mother's in the house crying, and she's very unhappy, and I think I did something wrong, and I don't know what I did. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do, you know. And so, let's go talk to your mommy. So they only talk to the mommy, and the mommy says, my sister and my mother were in the car, and my sister was driving, and they had an accident, and they both died. Oh, oh, oh. Okay. Well, did you tell Johnny, your son, that? No, I didn't want to make him feel unhappy. Well, do you know that he thinks that he did something bad, and that's why you're crying? That he thinks you hate him, and that's why you're crying? Wouldn't it be better to tell him the truth and see what he says? Tell it to him once. So she says, Johnny, your aunt and your grandma were driving in the car and had an accident, and both were killed, and they're dead. What's dead? Dead is means that they're not coming back anymore. They're going to live with God. Oh, okay. And let's go out and play now. You know, it's done. Life goes on. And we're the ones who get all shook up about death, and we're the ones who get all shook up about life, and we're the ones who get all shook up about feelings. And there are no feelings except ours. And when our feelings get out of whack, then we're in trouble. So, now, the doctor checks you out, and he finds your symptoms, and he tells you you're going to die. And you say, well, that's not my choice. And he says, well, you're going to die. Well, that's not my choice. Doctor, I think that you and I have come to the end of our association. Well, just running away from me isn't going to change the facts about what you are. And so you run away from the doctor, and you go to a different doctor, perhaps. And at the different doctor, you say, Doctor, I want to live. I want to live a long, happy life, and I want to know how I can do that. And the doctor says, oh, you're easy, you know. And then, Doctor, check me over and check my symptoms and check my vital signs and see where I'm at. The doctor checks the vital signs and says, my goodness, you're a wee bit low. You know, it looks like you're ready to go. And you say, no way. And the doctor says, well, if no way, then show a little sign of life. Show a little enthusiasm for life. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. And start having this positive mental attitude. And, well, Doctor, am I going to die? Only if you want to. And it looked like you want to, from the way you've been acting, the way you treat your body. Well, what should I do? Well, go out and take some long walks. Find some woman to make you happy, and make her happy. Find some dog to make happy, you know, and make them happy. Go find a place that you're retired, you know. Go find some place to entertain yourself, you know. Go down to the beach and run along the beach. Go buy a sailboat. Go get a yacht. You know, go get a cruise ship, you know. Go do something. Get active. Get involved in life. But doctor, I've only got a short time to live. Well, then live it well. Enjoy it. So he comes back after his third cruise, and he says, Doctor, how do I feel? And doctor says, you ask me. How do you feel? Well, he says, I feel like taking another cruise because that's fun. Those young chicks on the cruise are all looking for guys to dance with, and there's not enough men around, and so they take me. And, you know, I feel just like a young buck, you know, and I feel wonderful. And they respect me and love me, and I respect them and love them, and we have fun together. You know, Doc, life was never like this before, you know. Before, I'd always just go to my job and come home, and my wife was there, and then when she died, then just wasn't much to live for anymore, and my children had all moved away in other parts of the world and didn't write very much. Had you written them? No, but they didn't write. So, you know, well, okay, that's the way life goes. You see, is the doctor for death or life? It's what you want him for. Are you going to the doctor to live, or are you going to the doctor to die? Are you going to the doctor to have him tell you what your symptoms are so you know how bad off you are? Or to go to the doctor to have him tell you what your symptoms are so that you can alleviate them and put them behind you? You know? Put them behind you. Now, here we have our second point here, and it says, every doctor is trained to reveal wholeness. Why is every doctor trained to reveal wholeness?
Natural, because it is the natural state of...
Wholeness is a natural state of being?
Yeah.
Well, if wholeness is a natural state of being, the doctor doesn't have to be trained in that then, does he? Does he? Does he?
No. It's in him a knowingness that it is so.
What sort of thing is it that a doctor is trained in to reveal wholeness?
Well,
What do you think it might be, anybody?
Encourage wholeness.
What's that, please?
Encourage wholeness. Encourage the patient.
The doctor is trained to reveal wholeness, and you're saying he is trained to encourage the patient to enjoy their own wholeness.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Have you ever met a doctor like that?
Yeah.
They're rare. They're rare. Why are they rare? Because a doctor is trained to find your mistakes. He is trained to find your illness. He is trained to find your problems. He is trained to find that which is not functioning correctly in you. That's what he's trained to find. He is not trained to find your wholeness. Now, if he were trained to find your wholeness, we would have more people above ground than below. Really. If a doctor were trained to find your wholeness, what would he do? What would he do? You know, what's our fellow's name who has a big bushy head of hair and he's an alternative medicine doctor out of
Wild.
Wiles, yeah, Wild. And what's his first name?
Andrew.
Andrew Wiles. Andrew Wiles, yes. He's a popular doctor. And he is into what?
Alternative medicine.
Wholeness. He uses alternative medicines, yes, but he's into wholeness. He's not into sickness. He is into every way to make the body more and more sound. I'm not promoting him. I'm not trying to say he's a great guy or not a great guy. He is a great guy. But the thing is, he is promoting wholeness. Now, how does he promote wholeness?
He promotes a healthy lifestyle.
A healthy lifestyle. Now, isn't that a good phrase? He promotes a healthy lifestyle. And a healthy lifestyle is all these aspects. Proper thinking, proper eating, proper drinking, proper walking, proper exercises, proper company, attitudes, yes, and that's thinking, but attitudes, yes. You see, he promotes all those things. What does a medical doctor usually promote? Take these pills and take care of yourself, you know? He might say, stop eating so much sugar or salt this week. And then next week, he says, eat more salt because salt has just been found to cure your illness. And that's true. And eat bananas or don't eat bananas. Or you got too much potassium. You got to have more magnesium with the potassium. And you got to mix these things with that. And, you know, when you have a natural diet, when you have a simple, easy diet, not necessarily a special diet, just simple things, you cover the ballpark in every area. Now, this is a fact, and none of you know it. None of you ever cared to know it, and you may not know it if I keep talking about you not knowing it, because I may forget to tell it to you. But this is a fact. When we were born, our body was born with every vitamin and mineral it needs to maintain itself. But this you may not know. When we were born, our body was born with the manufacturing plant for every mineral and vitamin that the body needs. We manufacture our own vitamins and minerals to the exquisite extent of whatever our desire or need is. And to a large extent, we're still doing it. But at times in our life, we have depleted some of our particular energies, vitamins you might say, and so we took multiple vitamins. So we took excessive vitamins to make up for what we lost. And in the process, our ability to recuperate, to return to the reproduction, to the production of the vitamin that we needed in our system, stopped being made. And because it stopped being made, then we had to continue to feed it from the outside. And if we forget, then we're in trouble. Now, this is not only in one area of life. This is in many areas of life. If we could be trained just to eat normal things as they're grown from the ground, what did the Bible say? Good. The fruits of the tree and the nuts and the seeds thereof. If we would eat just those things, strangely enough, thousands of years ago they said that, you know, how strange, you know. Maybe they didn't have cows and pigs and animals to eat, you know. My goodness. Maybe they didn't have carnivorous type creatures on earth. Do you think maybe not? Maybe they didn't have carnivorous creatures on earth at the time that God created the earth. You know, how about that? But at the time the earth was created, man was given these things to eat, according to the Bible. And the Bible is a story of the religious development of people. This is what they believed in those early days. And how wise they were. How wise they were. I told you the story of Dr. Edmund Bordeaux Seke, who had meal meditations, one of the first places we came to here, and we rented that 80 acres for many years. And Dr. Seke was a medical doctor, and he had been out of the Sorbonne, and he had been out of Paris and out of many other places, an excellent doctor, and well-renowned, well-written, a lot of books. We have many of his books. And he went to an island in the Pacific Ocean as he had just received his medical certificate, and that was his first assignment. And he went to this island, young punk, you know it all. And when he got to the island, all the rest of the staff had been waiting for a replacement so they could have a vacation and get away from there, some permanently and some just temporarily. And so they heard he was coming, they knew he was coming on this ship, and they left on the ship that left just before. So when they left, the island was empty of medical practitioners. And he arrived on this island of what? What disease did they have? Leprosy. It was an island of lepers. And they were losing their arms and legs and everything under the sun. It was quite tragic. Well, he was not an authority on leprosy, but he was an authority on diet, he felt. And so he decided that he would take every bit of canned food that they had, and they had a great deal of it, and throw it in the ocean. Get rid of all the canned food. That's what they'd been eating. And then just feed them pineapples and coconuts and things that grew natural on the island, mangoes and what have you. And by the time the staff came back, the few that did, all the lepers were healed, really. By the time the staff came back, all the lepers were healed because, well, he was a man of magic. This is it, this is it. And he's just a young punk kid, you know, maybe 21, 22, whatever, you know. And he just got his medical certificate. And this was his first assignment. And he went there, and he had no objections. He said, "I'm a special doctor. I have come here to perform a miracle on this island. We're going to cure every one of you, and you're going to be whole and perfect." What a thing to say to these poor people who are losing their arms and legs and hands and what. Oh, my goodness sake. They were a mess. You know, leprosy is quite something. So here comes this know-it-all doctor, and the people were eager to have anybody tell them anything that they rather than that they're going to die. And so they helped him carry the canned goods and throw it in the ocean. They helped him throw their food away that they're used to eating, that they were comfortable in eating, and into the ocean. Into the ocean. Out, into the ocean. And they punctured the cans, and they did other things to make sure that they wouldn't be used, that they'd be ruptured and they'd have seawater and stuff. And gone. Then he had to tell them how to prepare the food. He didn't know beans about it. He just knew the stuff was good. He says, all right, now, what's your favorite way to prepare the pineapple? He had no idea. And they told him what was a natural way to prepare it, nothing special. And that's exactly right. Now, what is your way to prepare the coconuts? You know, I mean, that's really silly. But they told him. And he says, you are very exceptional at this. You are far better than most of my previous experiences. It's true. And then he talked to them about the papaya tree and the mango trees, and he talked to them about the bananas. He talked to them about all the types of plants that grew on the island and how they made their things. And he got rid of their lead dishes. They had dishes made of lead, which in itself is rather dangerous. And he didn't know that it was that dangerous, but he just knew that he didn't want them eating off of any type of surface that was not personalized. So they played a game of throwing their plates into the ocean, and they zipped them out into the ocean and splashed them over the waves and stuff, and pretty soon they were all gone. All the metal pewter plates were gone. All the lead was gone. And within weeks, their diet had been acceptable. It was a little tough at first, but in weeks it was acceptable, because he made them think that they were eating the heavenly broth, you know, the heavenly essence of all. Within weeks, all of them were free of leprosy. All of them. Now you say, that's a miracle. You think they do that elsewhere, but they won't. Because as the naturalist profession says of the medical profession, they don't make any money off of that. They don't make any money off that. How do you make money off of pineapple and coconut and things like that? Even there, the stupid people, and I don't mean that too unkindly, but unkindly I mean it. How do these stupid people take wonderful coconut and add to it all sorts of things to make it different, to make it more perfect, to bring out more flavor and so on? They lose the naturalness of it. They lose its original purity and integrity. In all things, we want to get back to our original purity and integrity. We want to get back to who we really are. What is our divine self? Who is it that we are? Where is it that we're going? What is it? So he taught them to do that. Now, they no longer had leprosy, and all their evidences of leprosy were thrown in the ocean or burned or whatever, destroyed. So when the hospital people came back, the people no longer needed them. They were then sent to the mainland themselves after the doctors observed them and said, hey, you don't have leprosy anymore. You just don't have it. He didn't make that observation because he would have been a little biased, but he was right. So they went home. And Dr. Seke himself, rather amazing fellow, he came across the Atlantic Ocean on some boat and through the Caribbean. And as he came through the Caribbean, they were in a great typhoon, in a great hurricane. And their ship went, and just the captain and Seke and one other crew member were surviving. And they were tossed up on some island. And the island had grass that grows in the sand grass, you know, not any bushes or anything else. And no water. And they all, we're going to die. But every morning, Dr. Seke, he was maybe about 35, 40 at the time, he would be bending down, licking the grass. And the captain came over and he said, hey, Seke, what is this all about, you know? Why are you licking this grass? What's this all about? And Seke said, I'm having my drink. Drink? Where are you getting the water? Well, it's the water that's left on the leaf here from the overnight, the dew. But that's nothing. Not when you drink a lot of it. I lick every leaf and I get all sorts of... Now, don't shake the leaves. You shake it off there. And go over and get your own patch over there. There's plenty of grass on this island. You know, go get it. And, of course, the other fellow thought they were crazy, too, but he did it, and they survived. And then when they finally picked them up and brought them to shore, they all were amazed that they could survive under that circumstance. And and perfectly healthy. They lost a little weight, but, you know, they were healthy. They had water, and they had a good attitude. And they had an amazement attitude that was a technique that worked. Now, many sailors and many survivors in many areas do things that are absolutely unique and yet work very well. Now, here we have, every doctor is trained to reveal wholeness. He's trained to reveal, that's what we say. That's the he is trained to reveal the wholeness of illness. He is trained to reveal the wholeness of health. He is trained to reveal the wholeness of whatever it is that he's training himself in. Now, is the doctor training himself to know illness and to know how to treat it? Or is he training himself to know how to improve wholeness in the body? You have 12 people, 6 of them are healthy and 6 of them are sick. And so you work with the sick people, and some die, some don't. You work with the healthy people, and all of them get better. Not only be healthy, but they get healthier, because you're starting from something. So if you were to take the sick people and train them like you do the healthy people, the sick people would get healthier without the use of medicines, and without the use of all these other sort of ways of believing, called surgery and other things like that. They have a way of wholeness without that. Now, how did they get that way of wholeness? Because the doctor was teaching wholeness. The doctor was teaching health. He was teaching put a new cause in motion. He was teaching, see yourself whole. See yourself healthy. See yourself fantastic. He didn't know about the stem cells that we know about, which make it a lot easier for us to think and see that way. But now we know about it. Now, what did Dr. Seke do? Dr. Seke spoke to the white stem cells of each of those patients on that island, and he said to them, let's do this. Let's take all this canned goods and throw it in the ocean and puncture. Let's take all these dishes and throw them. And those people said, sure, it's a game. It's something to do, you know, because he treated it like a game. And he didn't say, this is going to make you healthy. But it made them healthy because they got thinking about something different than their illness. They stopped thinking about hobbling around on a crutch. They stopped thinking about a leg that was decaying. They stopped thinking about all the things that are, whatever that is, you know, whatever that illness is. We don't need to know the name. I forget these names as quick as I think of them. And I think that's the best way to do it. So, as these people were throwing all this stuff away, they also were throwing away all of those tissues of illness. They're throwing away all, and then he had them bathe in the ocean too. And they were used to bathing in the spring. But he had them bathe in the ocean because he told them that the salt water of the ocean was an emollient that would completely wash off all of the illness that they had, all of the dead skin, and the new skin could blossom forth. If they just go into the spring water that comes out of the mountain and that they had on that island, that's not enough. But it's the ocean water and the salt water, and it rinses it away. Go in there and spend 2 or 3 hours every day in there with leprosy, you know, with the skin all eating up. And but they went in there. And do you think that was comfortable? Boy, the salt water getting into those open wounds. But his magical medicine just made miracles happen for the people on that island. And Dr. Seke, unfortunately, is gone, but he's written books about these things and stories about these things, and it's not a matter of what he did. It's that he did these things intuitively. He listened to the divine within him because he was just a young kid. He listened to the divine within him and followed it, and miracles happened. The people changed. The people didn't believe in him. They believed in the magic that he talked about. Because out of the mouths of babes, oftentimes, comes wonderful things. Think about that. Neat stuff, huh? Every doctor is trained to reveal wholeness in body, mind, and spirit. It's almost like the one above. Why is the doctor trained to reveal wholeness in body, mind, and spirit? The doctor is trained to reveal wholeness because in the hospitals they want to keep it whole. Now, we read a humorous little clip out of the Discovery magazine, and it said 90,000 people die every year from the use of the remote control from television in a hospital. That the remote control spreads diseases in a hospital faster than any other device because the remote control is not cleaned off. There's no way to clean it off. They could put a special glove on it, and then you push the button through the glove, but the thing is, they don't. And then the patient has an open wound, and they're working on their wound, and they press the remote control against their wound because it's something hard to press in there and make it not feel so bad. And then they take it away, and it has all of the disease germs on it, and then they die or something, and the next patient is wheeled into the bed, and they don't think of washing off the remote control and cleaning the thing up, and the wire that goes to it, and all that sort of stuff. And so the next patient has the privilege of experiencing the previous patient's illness, you know. And so that's quite an honor. It's what you go to the hospital for, so that you can have new exotic diseases made available to you at no additional cost. So it's kind of a fun thing, but I make it sound silly, but it is really quite serious, and it's what does happen. It's what does happen. Although, when you stop and think about it, surgery was not a major thing in hospitals throughout the world until the 19th century. And so what little surgery was done. But the thing is, people didn't die so much. They didn't need the surgery as much in the old days as they do today, because now that we have the ability to do it, now the need is there for it. What do doctors do? The minute they know how to do laser surgery on your eyes, they advertise it. And the minute pharmaceutical firms know how to create drugs that do this, that, and the other thing, they make it available in the market. And then they let it be black marketed. And black marketed means that it is marketed before the FDA approves it. And one of the things that you look at the Popular Science magazine, if you're interested, you go on the back pages of the Popular Science magazine, and you will find people, they sell these pills, and you take this pill, and you'll have an erection for 4 hours. You know, my goodness sakes. And the women just love it, the article says, and the women think that this is the most wonderful thing. My boyfriend is this, here, and that. And isn't that wonderful? Isn't that what sex is all about? It's just supposed to be a beat-em-up tool, you know? Isn't that what it's all about? Or is it about sex should be part of love? It should be part of a relationship. It should be a part of sharing. And why is it that we have venereal diseases that are so rampant and so everywhere, including AIDS, that travel all over the world? It's because we have not made a treasure, a miracle, something very special out of sex. We have made it as the most common, useful thing in the world that gets rid of an itch, you know. So is that what you want to do? Do you want to live a body that it manipulates you, that makes demands on you, and you have to go and fulfill those demands? Seems kind of cool. Cruel. C-R-U-E-L, not C-O-O-L. Cruel. Every doctor is trained to reveal wholeness in body, mind, and spirit. Well, now, this is what we'd like. We would like the doctors to be trained to reveal wholeness in body, mind, and spirit. But they can't be taught to do that with our medical schools the way they are today. Because our medical schools have three aspects to them. Number one, make money. Now, that sounds cruel. But it's true. If they don't make money, they can't stay in business. So they got to make money. And so they got to do all the things that the business requires to make money. Number two, they're supposed to have an ethic. But that's number three. Number two is what are the techniques of working with patients in various areas? How do you diagnose patients? How do you figure out what a patient's problems are? Okay? And then number three is what?
Ethics.
Number three is ethics. And ethics should really be first. But number three is ethics. And where is there in this triumph, this three aspects of the medical hospital, where it says the medical hospital, a medical doctor, should be taught how to work with healing patients. A medical doctor should be taught how to work with good health. A medical doctor should be taught how to train his patients in preventative medicine, in preventative medicine, so they don't need the doctor. Now, who's going to want to do that? Who's going to want to be a medical doctor wasting time on learning something that's not going to make you any money? You know, and truly it's not. It won't make you money if your patients don't need you anymore. If your patients are whole and perfect and they don't need you, then that won't make you any money. And who are some of the richest people in the country? The medical doctors. Not as much today as it used to be, but it's still very, very good. Medical doctors, medical profession is a very wealthy profession. Every medical doctor that you know about who is worth his salt, he is very wealthy. And it's not bad. This is not meant to be a put-down to the medical doctor. It's just meant to recognize where do you go when you want wholeness. Now, you go to the church. You want the minister to treat with you, the priest to treat with you, the rabbi. You want somebody to help you to have an understanding of the spiritual qualities that are involved to do the healing that Jesus taught. And so you go to the church. Now, again, we have three aspects. The church teaches what first? Its philosophy. What it understands about Buddhism, Hinduism, Islamism, Christianity, or whatever. You understand? Okay, that's first. Second, it teaches how can we get money from the people? Because without money, it cannot exist. The ministers have nothing to live on. You know, they have no income. This is true. It's not meant to be facetious in any way. And three, how can we work with the people on their spiritual life? Third. And what did Jesus tell his disciples? Go out and preach and teach and heal. Preach and teach and heal. Go out and share the word, how to do it. Teach the word how to do it, and heal the sick. Now, is there any place in that you have heard that there's a building, that there's a church, that there is a discipline, that there is a dogma? But you see, that's where we get all tangled up. My dad was a building contractor. And he built homes for very wealthy people, and he built it during the Depression, when there was no dollars around, not very many. But he was still, the people could afford it. They had these big industries and businesses, but they didn't have the cash available. But my dad, he knew how to handle that. And he would go into the people, and he would take their plan or their idea from their mind and say, I know what you want to do. You want this, 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 this. He'd draw it out for them. They didn't even have to pay an architect. And so they said, yes, that's what I want, Herb. And I'll get to the best price I can and build it and have it done in 2 months. And they said, great. What's it going to cost? He said, in his head, eighth grade education. You know, and so he says, oh, it's going to cost you about $80,000. This is in Depression time. And $80,000 is a lot of money. And so they said, Herb, you always undercut yourself, and you always give us all our money worth, so we're going to figure 85. And they do that. They figured 85, or a little better. And Pop built it, and then he gave them the report of how much it cost for his men, how much it cost for the equipment and all the things that had to be used, and all the details that had to be done, and how much, I forget whether it was 30 or 50% markup that he had on it. And he had that mark on there, and they said, "But Herb, we said 85. And Herb said, "Well, my cost only and everything came only to, you know, 72. And no, we said 85, and that's what you get, you know. They had to fight him to keep the money. But he'd go to them and he'd say, "This is the plan, these are the details," and they'd say, "Herb, good, go for it." And they'd shake hands on it. That would be the only bond, the only signature, the only contract that they'd have. And he built many, many of the very important people's homes in Milwaukee and Wauwatosa and Shorewood, Whitefish Bay, Greenfish, Green Hills, and so forth, and all those beautiful areas around Milwaukee, and the breweries that went with them, and their manufacturing plants and things like that. Very, very happily he did all these things, but he did all these things with such an honest heart, never wanting to cheat in any way, never wanting to take anything that wasn't his, and his businesses were all an absolute success. He didn't have to fight for business like the others were doing. And the architects came to him, the finest architects, because they wanted to be associated with him, because they wanted to be associated with a man of integrity. And what's his name? The famous architect, Wright.
Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah, Frank Lloyd Wright was one of our regular architects that we built for. And I worked for my dad while he was building his stuff, and it's fantastic. At the University of Chicago, we had our dorm in one of Frank Lloyd Wright's houses down there. Special, quite a house. Hit the silly 1930s model, you know. But it's what it was, and it was great. But you see, these are the things that you do. Now, if a doctor has this kind of integrity, what's going to happen to him? What kind of doctor is Steve?
A doctor with integrity.
Now, why do you say he's a doctor with integrity? He's got lots of money.
No.
Don't let me push your button. Why do you say he's a doctor with integrity when he's got lots of money?
It's got nothing to do with the money.
It's not that it doesn't have anything to do with money. It has to do with what?
With himself, his personality. He's my brother.
As far as you're concerned. But no, my point is, why is he successful? He's successful because he likes himself. He likes his work. He is what with his patients? He is teaching them wholeness. He is teaching them how to live a whole life. He is teaching them preventative medicine, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Well, now, you see, I don't even know all these things about him, but I know it. Because that's what a doctor who likes himself and who's successful and who is in every way a happy guy, that's what he's doing. You understand that, Heinz? You understand it, Ellen?
Yes.
Can you see that? Is this the way all the doctors you work with, Arlen?
Yes.
Good. You too, Precious?
Yes.
Yeah, you too? You know the same doctor he does, don't you? Great. But do you understand me? Why is Steve so happy? And why is it that everything Steve does turns up roses? And it does. Everything he does. Every problem that would come and sort of wash somebody else down, he comes up looking like a rose. Just smelling like a rose. Just wonderful. And people respect him and love him, not because he's a nice guy, but because he has integrity. Because he is a man who believes in himself, who likes himself. You see, when you like yourself, and you believe in yourself, and you follow whatever are the real code of ethics of your business, your activity, then you got it. Like when Gregor was working in the wine sales department, you know, and he was selling, you know, boxes and boxes of wine, and other people were coming in. What's going on here? What's going on here? You're too good. Get out of here. You know? So, you see, that's why you got to be the boss. And when you're the boss, you can do anything. Okay. Now, the word nurse means one who recognizes wholeness wherever they look. A nurse recognizes wholeness wherever they look. When Irene goes in to see the people she goes in to see, she looks right through them, right past the illusion to their wholeness. And then she makes them smile, she makes them happy, she makes them forget the illusion they have and remember the wholeness. She gets them back to remembering the way it was when they were feeling healthy, when they were feeling fine. And when she gets them back to that memory, then she is the real doctor. She is recognizing with them their wholeness, and they are recognizing their wholeness. Do you understand this? Isn't that neat? Neat stuff, isn't it? But that's the way it works. And as you work with these people, they end up smiling. Every person whom you leave, every person wherever you have been, and you are finished, when you walk out the door, they're, you know, you're so wonderful, always come back soon again, you're so fantastic, we love, yeah? Yeah? Yeah?
I think I feel good.
Yeah? Uh-huh. Yeah?
Yes.
And you have, they come to the door to wish you well and wish you back, because they love you, and they can't even walk. How do they come to the door? With their consciousness, with their heart, with their love. Irene, Irene, whatever they call you, come back soon again, you know. Come back 4 times a week instead of just once. Yeah, maybe 6 times a week, 7. Irene, we love you. You make us feel like we're wonderful people, like we have something to live for. Irene, you're a precious angel. Irene, Irene. I want to leave my will to you. I want to leave my millions to you. Irene, I know you won't take it. What?
Last one was a good one.
What? But no, this is what it's all about. Nurses look past the illusion that they're there to tend, to see the wholeness that they're there to draw out, and they draw out that wholeness by seeing it and by calling to the attention of the people. You're whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of your body's. But don't you see? Don't you see what I got? No. You want to tell me about it? Yes. Well, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Why don't you want to hear it? You're supposed to be here to hear my illnesses. No, I'm not. I'm supposed to be here to tell you how wonderful you are and how you can experience wholeness wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now. I'm here only to talk about wholeness. 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 That's all you know. That's all you are. That's all you can be. Now, do you understand? That is a responsibility on your heart, on your soul, on your being. You are not in the business of mortuary. You're not in the burial business. You are not a mortician. You're not an obstetrician. You're not a clinician. You are an angel of the Lord. You are an angel of God. You are an angel of wholeness. You are an angel of purity. You are an angel of the original purity and integrity. Isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. Can you see that? This works for all of us. Right? What kind of people do you have working in your office? Just lovely angels. All of them. And you see them all expressing that joy, that love, that harmony every day of their life. And if they have any problems, they leave them at home. And you surround them at home with your pure white light of love, and then they don't have the problems when they get there either. And you see them being the most fabulous associates, whatever you want to call them, and anyone could have in the world, because that's who they are. And you too. You too, Miss Inga.
Yeah.
Miss Borg. Yeah. You too. Yeah. You too, Sylvia. And Ellen, you know that. Gregor, you'll find out one day when he gives up fighting the outer and just accepts what his reality is. And same with you, Heinz. You and Gregor got the same experience that you're going through. You're fighting to keep the status quo when you don't want the status quo. You know what status quo is? What is status quo?
Continue to take the things or...
Speak louder and say it.
That you are convinced to need certain things which you do not need.
In other words, no change. That's simply said, that's what status quo is. No change. To stay with whatever you're doing and do it and have no changes. Now, that's what both you and Gregor are into, status quo. And it's silly. Maybe by tomorrow you'll be out of it. I would like to see that. In fact, I will see that in me for you, and I would like you to see it in you for you. But when we argue for our
limitations,
would you like to say it loud enough so that everyone could hear it?
When we argue for our limitations,
they are ours.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a whole sentence, huh?
Right.
Oh, how nice. What did she say?
When we argue for our limitations, they're ours.
Ingeborg, what did you say?
When we argue for our limitations, they are ours.
What? Irene, when we argue?
When we argue for our limitations, they are ours.
Very good. Sylvia?
When we argue for our limitations, they are ours.
Ellen?
When we argue for our limitations, they are ours.
Gregor?
I don't really want to put this in motion.
Oh, that is something that is a truism, that if you do that, then you get problems. Do you have a limitation, Gregor?
No.
Then don't worry about it. This is 2 times 2 is 4. And if you use 2 times 2 is 4, and you say 2 times 2 is 5, and that is incorrect, and you'll always get an incorrect answer, and it's not bad to say 2 times 2 is 5, it's just incorrect.
Yeah.
You know. Verstehe, Heinz? Can you say it?
When we argue for our limitations and the hours.
Right. Okay, let's have lunch.
Thank you.
It says here, the word nurse means one who recognizes wholeness wherever they look. Wonderful. Well, thank you for being here this morning and making my morning bright and cheery and filled with light and happiness and joy and peace and harmony. And I will see you after lunch, if not during lunch. And what are we having for lunch?
We are having a sandwich buffet.
Sandwich what?
Sandwich buffet.
Good.